Welcome to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason, coming to you live today from the Chicago Board of Trade. It is Monday, November the 6th. The Closing Market Report is made possible, of course, by AgriGold Hybrids. Funding agricultural programming on AM 580 is an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialist, on the web at agrigold.com. Of course, I'm here at the Board of Trade. Had to do some business for University of Illinois Extension in a program called Market Maker at a hotel next door called the Union League Club of Chicago. The Board of Trade, kind enough to host us here for today and tomorrow. We'll be bringing you the Chicago Board of Trade numbers and the Mercantile Exchange numbers right here from the CBOT. A special thanks to a couple of folks some of you may remember. A WILL veteran, Craig Grabner, helped us set up the programming content for the day, and he's brought to us a couple of traders from the pits here at the CBOT. And Maria Gimski, who used to be the PR person for somebody that most of you will be familiar with, as 15th District Congressman Tom Ewing, a former 15th District Congressman. Both of them fondly remembering their time in East Central Illinois, and I can believe that that would be the case. Our thanks to them for helping us out today. Of course, a little bit later in this program, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast that comes up at the bottom of the hour, when we'll talk with Mark Russo or John Davis out of Chesapeake Energy right here in Chicago. They'll join us by phone from their offices. And Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois, will be with us too today. The Closing Market Report, of course, made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. That is a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines, 800-252-2013 in Illinois, and in Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to Cooley at admworld.com. On the line with us on this Monday, as he usually is from his offices in Bloomington, Illinois, at Grainfield Marketing, is Kurt Kimmel. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
You know, I'm here at the Board of Trade, but frankly, I'm in a conference room and don't have complete access to the final numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade or the Mercantile Exchange. Could you bring us those numbers, please?
December corn closed up 1.25 at 343.5. The March up 1.5 at 358.5. New crop December up 4.25 at 353.75. In the soybeans, the November beans were up 0.25 cent at 649.25. January's unchanged at 662.75. And the March up 0.75 cents at 674.5. The new crop November beans 07 was up 2.5 at 699.5. In the wheat side of the equation, the December wheat was up 5.5 at 498. The March up 4.75 cents at 518.75. And the 07 new crop July at 476.5, up 7.5 cents on the day. The meal finished up about $1 and oil down 10 to 15. On the Mercantile Exchange, the December cattle were down 35 at 85.55. November feeders down $1.07 at $1.35. December hogs up 35 at 64.52. The feds were up 52 at 67.77. The bellies down 92 at 90.52 in the February, Todd.
Kurt, last week we took up a discussion that we tried to write about just a little bit in our weekend newsletter about Elliott waves that you had been reading about the previous week. Do you want to? Did you take a look at what we wrote? I think you probably got a chance to see that in the weekend newsletter. And the basis for on that Elliott wave was that it showed the potential for the marketplace in the near term this year and next year, but there was a possibility that it could drift back lower by the 2008. Was there anything that we wrote that wasn't quite right and that we missed in our email newsletter over the weekend?
Well, when you look at the overall pattern, this suggests the pattern that could unfold over the next year or two. Now, the question is the timing on it. It could happen sooner or later, and that's for the market to decide. But the bottom line of the whole discussion is, the upside objectives, not only from the Elliott Wave guys, but some other sources suggest a move towards the $4 benchmark basis of the lead contract. But two, probably the underlying thing we need to remember as a producer or as an owner of corn particularly, that the risk becomes back down to the other side as we get through this bullish momentum. Once we get the bullish news priced into the marketplace, the risk becomes back the other way. But Elliott Wave is one type of technical tool you can use to sort of project or map out a plan to look forward to. There's many other indicators or programs to use too, but it's one of the tools that traders use to sort of look out for what price direction the market could go.
Tell me about your view of the marketplace in Chicago today and how things in this market are setting up for Thursday's release from the USDA.
Product consolidation. From day one, the market would get going. One of the benchmarks to look for was D's lead contract, the 350 area. We tested that there last week. Same thing on the November upfront beans is the 650. I know we went a little bit above that, but with the report in front of us, I wouldn't be surprised to see some consolidation. The average corn production estimate is 10,838,000,000 bushels, and that's down about 70 million bushels. Their yield, they're bringing it down to 152.5 versus 154.7. On the beans, they're looking for a little higher production number, a 3.24 versus 3.189 last month. The average yield is about 43.5 bushels an acre versus 41.8. So I think the trade's going to sort of price that or position for those numbers, and we'll see what the USDA has to say as we see those numbers Thursday morning. But the bottom line is we still got that bullish mentality out there, and it's probably going to hold in there for another few weeks yet. When you look at the big picture, talking to the commercial guys, they bought a large chunk of the corn crop. Some cases, some areas, they bought over 90-95% of the corn crop already. So that sort of tells me the corn is moving into strong hands, and usually what that happens is the market stays fairly strong for a while.
Well, I do have a question about that, because once you get the corn into the hands of the commercials, and we talked a little bit about this Friday afternoon with our cash grain analyst, how the marketplace changes when the commercials no longer need to bid up the price of corn to bring it out of the bin or the field, and then it's simply a basis trade. So you say it's in strong hands, but in the same spot, you also said that probably means the market will stay strong. I would seem to me that might be actually the opposite way, that once it gets into the commercial hands, that they don't really care what happens to that price and that it could more easily drop down. Did I get that right, or am I just not thinking about the market?
Well, I don't know if we fully 100% coverage from the commercial side. I think there's some areas where there's still corn that needs to be jarred loose, so I might have misstated that as full 100% ownership, but
sure.
That's where the trend's going is into stronger hands, and you're correct, and that's probably from the standpoint once they get some ownership and the buyers get to where they want to need, who's going to buy it next, and that's why producers need to be scale-up sellers here and take advantage of this, because once this buying interest dries up, who's going to buy it? Usually they pawn it off into the public, but there's no reason for the public to come forward right now and buy it. Typically that happens during the summer when the yards turn brown. So that sort of fits the scenario that we're going to probably price a lot of the bullish news in the marketplace, you know, this fall prior to year end. So that's the fear that we could get this stuff pretty well bought up and then run out of momentum and start to turn lower as the calendar turns 2007.
Your assessment of the mercantile exchange trade for the day?
Well, some consolidation back and filling. The beef sector seems to be the one we need to watch in through here as corn values stay higher, and actually the feeders are going to continue to roll over here. We're starting the golden roll. So we're going to see rolling just like in the grains here. We're going to see the D's move on out. Main thing in the mercantile is the high price of corn, which remains bearish. That's going to continue to hamper the producer here as he has to pay up and buy higher input costs. Cash hog market's kind of steady here. There's ideas maybe we can firm up here on Tuesday, Wednesdays. They sort of bid up to gather some needs for this weekend's kill.
Kurt, we appreciate you being with us.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel is with Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report that happens each and every Monday afternoon. Joining us now here at the Chicago Board of Trade, Steve Bruce, an independent grain trader, used to be with Illinois Grain and General Mills, and has been on the floor trading as an independent for how long, Steve?
Well, basically, I've been on the floor since 1974 as a runner in many capacities, and I've been a broker on the grain floor since 1981, but I just went independent last 6 months ago.
And you're trading in the wheat and the corn pits, and it seems to me that an independent in the wheat pit in the last month and a half would have to be a heck of a rough ride.
It's been vicious. I mean, it's turning out the same way in corn and beans as well. I like to call the funds right now the blind monsters, the guys that just come in here and roll people over. They've got more money than they know what to do with, and they look at line A crossing line B, and the blind monsters get their signals and they just buy, and they don't know what they're buying sometimes or selling what they're doing. They just do it, and you better not get in their way because they are very powerful. More dollars than bushels is how I like to look at it. And, you know, my background is cash grain, and there's a lot of us that are ex-cash grain traders that recently in the last couple months have seen a disconnect from the cash market and the futures market. But the thing is, it seems that we always come back to reality when we come back, when we come down to deliveries. At least the spreads do. The wheat spreads over the course of the last 2 months, there's a lot of guys that lost a lot of money because we all know the situation on soft red wheat, specifically in Toledo. We do have a lot of soft red wheat around. We're not going to lose the soft red wheat this year. Carry should stay fairly wide, but we did see a lot of guys that were overextended, and we saw for example, the Dease March wheat spread one day last month trade 12-cent premium of the March one day, and the same day trade a 12-cent carry. That's vicious, and right now the spread's trading at 19.5-cent carry as we approach first notice day. So we have seen some very, very, very different market forces at work here that have really jarred the market. And the thing is, I did just listening to your previous guest talking about the feeder cattle market, the cattle market. One thing we're doing in the corn market right now is we've got a lot of people euphoric, thinking that ethanol is just basically going to keep this market going to $4, $5, and we can't grow enough corn next year. But one thing I do look at is we are seeing corn is a feed. And when you add 6 billion bushels of corn domestically and everything we export, I presume, is going to be used for feed, you've got the majority, 75% of the corn crop, used for feed. And when the chicken guys, the hog guys, the cattle guys, the dairy guys are starting to lose and hemorrhage money, I think you're going to start, it's human nature that these guys are going to start looking around saying, why should we suffer when everyone's making, all the ethanol producers are making all this money subsidized? So I think after the election, after tomorrow, you're going to start seeing some more and more people talk about the situation, specifically with ethanol. I don't think we're going to see anything change in the next year or two, but as this, I think we'll see some changes made to that to ethanol subsidies within the next 2 years.
When you take a look at the marketplace, and you can talk about a shift in paradigms. They talked about that a little bit in the 70s with the price rise, in the 80s, in the 1990s when they went to really booming prices. And there's again a talk about a shift in paradigm for the corn and the wheat markets in terms of, well, the new paradigm will not be $2.25 or $2.40 corn, but it'll be $2.80, $2.90, $3.10, $3.20 for corn. Can you see that happening as a pit trader?
Oh, sure, definitely. Yet, I think you just hit it on the nose. We heard the same thing in the 70s. Plant fence row to fence row. Russia needs our food. We're going to get the Middle East of all the oil producers. We're going to have a bushel of wheat for a barrel of oil. That was the 70s. In the 80s, we heard some of the same thing, and then we had to have the pick, payment in kind year. And then in the 90s, we had the hedge to arrive debacle on corn. We had the fact that we didn't have any wheat when we went up to $7.50 in Chicago. And yet, we always seem to gravitate back toward $2.40 on corn, $3.60 on wheat. We have to remember that the world's a very small place right now. You are going to see people respond, not just us, but you have Russia, Belarus, Ukraine, some very fertile regions that really have never seen prices like this. They're going to respond. So my advice to my clients, my farm clients, is you look at $3.50 new December corn, you better have 40% sold, because the thing is, you can't be greedy. At the $3.50, you might see $5, you might see $10. Who knows? Yet historically, it always seems that we come back quicker than we think.
Well, are you concerned at all that the Board of Trade will disconnect with the cash price on that, given the amount of money that the funds are putting into the CBOT and the Mercantile Exchange?
Basically, we have seen that in the short run, okay? And we saw that happen in natural gas last year when we had Texas natural gas at trading $1.25 per 100 or whatever their increment is, and we saw the futures in New York get to $15 but then stay there for 4 months. Then all of a sudden, you know, we went back down to $4 or $5, and we saw a lot of guys lose a lot of money. Arithmetic lost $6 billion, so on and so forth. You can fool the market only so long. I mean, I think eventually we have to remember, the main user of corn right now is losing money. The feeders, they're losing money. That's not saying, the thing is, they're not going to lose money forever. They're going to go out of business. So that corn demand is going to slip away. Maybe not this year. You're going to see a transition next year, and you'll definitely see, you know, unless the consumer wants to pay double the price for beef, for chicken, or whatever, you're going to see the market shift back.
Steve, we appreciate you being with us today. Steve Bruce is an independent trader here at the Chicago Board of Trade. We're broadcasting to you live from the CBOT building on the south end of LaSalle Street. Today's broadcast, of course, made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information available from Bob Bastifer in Danville. First Midwest Bank, FDIC, an equal housing lender. Joining us now, another trader from the Chicago Board of Trade, an old friend, I hope, at WILL. Hasn't been on the air with us at Commodity Week for a long time, but I hope that we get that fixed. Vic Lespinasse, another independent trader. Good afternoon to you, Vic.
Good afternoon to you.
You've been on the floor of the Board of Trade for how many years now?
34 years.
How is this year different than any of the previous times where you saw the market really start to boom?
Well, the funds are more active than ever before, for one, including the index funds. They're the newest kid on the block. And, of course, they only trade from the long side. So that is one difference. And, of course, the market is much bigger now. Even on slow days, we do a lot more business than we did in the past. Just last week, we had a record day volume-wise in corn. We had it was over 400,000 contracts. And we had a record day for the grains in general, over 1 million contracts in one day. And that's never, ever happened before.
Is this, in your mind, I know it's probably good for the board, but is it good for the market in the long run to have that much trade running through the board on any given day?
I think it is. It's more liquidity. That means hedgers can do whatever they need to do without fear of influencing the market. It means the market is deeper, more liquid, it's more accessible to everybody now than it ever was in the past. A lot of people now, they sit at their computer, they point and click and trade that way. And, of course, you can trade electronically now, something you could never do until August 1st. I think that's a big advantage for people also. It's instant fills, instant cancellations, instant order changes. I think it's a good thing.
In your experience, and this is the question I know most farmers will want asked, and a lot of traders, do you believe that corn can surpass the $4 level in the coming 6 to 9 months?
I think so. When I first started in the business, 1972, beans were about $3.50, and the big question was, can they get past $4? Here it is, 2006, soon to be 2007, and now the question is, can corn get there? If ethanol demand continues to grow, and today crude oil was up $1 a barrel or thereabouts, so if ethanol demand remains strong, I think eventually corn could get to that level. In September, the USDA's chief economist, Keith Collins, said it's going to an all-time high, which means it's going to at least $5.30 a bushel. So, you know, I think if Keith Collins says that, who am I to argue?
Would you take an opposite tack maybe than Steve Bruce? And I'm not sure about an opposite tax, but you mentioned that beans were below $4, and now, of course, they're above that. Are you of the mindset that this market will change what the trading range for corn might be and raise that up $1 or a half a dollar or 80 cents?
If the price of crude oil remains strong, I think things are going to change. But that's a big assumption. Crude oil sold off about $20 a barrel from its highs several months ago. And who's to say that it couldn't sell off even more? So assuming crude oil remains very strong, I think things will continue to change, and I think that means more to the upside in the grains.
Is there any lack of information that the members of the Board of Trade or that those who are in the floor on the pits have that they don't know about that you think that they would be better off with? Do they not hear enough about what's happening in the cash grain market? Do they not hear enough about what yields are like? What are the things that you might lack and you'd like to know about, more about from the field or the furrow that you don't hear about here in Chicago?
Well, you don't hear a lot about the cash market on the floor, but those people that are interested in the cash market can certainly find out about it. They can talk to people. They can read the wires. There are stories about the cash market. They can talk to contacts with cash grain companies that are on the floor. So one can find out what one needs to know. But a lot of traders just trade by feel. Others trade by charts. Some are pure fundamentalists. I mean, it runs the gamut. There's all different kinds of traders. Whatever works for you, that's what you should use. So you get the information that you need depending on what kind of trader you are. If you're a scalper, just trying to buy the bid and sell the offer all day, what the cash market's doing doesn't really make all that much difference.
We appreciate you being with us today, Vic. You have one more comment, sure.
I'm not independent, though. I'm with A.G. Edwards in St. Louis.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got the wrong set of information. Thank you much. We appreciate it. Vic Lespinos with A.G. Edwards in St. Louis. We appreciate your time today. The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety is a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, and it's a proud underwriter of agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps the residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606. On the line now with us to take a look at the cash grain market should be somebody from the Andersons right there in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you, Todd. How are you today?
I am very good. Is this Wyatt Muse?
This is Brian Stark.
Oh, it's Brian Stark. Man, I'm usually pretty good with your name.
Yeah,
but
not a problem.
One. I thought you were Wyatt there for a second. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the cash grain market as we head into this USDA report on Thursday. Are your expectations for the market to stay pretty steady on the way into that, trader step aside?
I would say so, Todd. I think most of the day, a very quiet day in Chicago. We've heard that it's been the lightest volume since the last USDA report. I think there's just an overall kind of calmness to things. I think you saw some fun buying towards the end of the session. Other than that, it seems like they're pretty content to wait until Thursday and see what the USDA says. Basis says shows no sign of letting off the gas pedal, still very firm. This fall, processor bids continue to strengthen now that harvest is wrapping up locally around them in East Central Illinois, still trying to pry loose the grip the farmers are holding on to that grain on the farm.
I want to ask you a little bit about this because I've harped on it just a bit. Maybe we could be wrong. We've heard that a lot of the cash grain is actually in the hands of folks like the Andersons and elevators rather than farmers. You seem to be telling me that that might not be completely the case. How much of your grain purchases do you think you've made at the Andersons?
Well, I still agree with you, like I said a couple weeks ago, in saying that the farmers have sold two-thirds of their crop. Most of them have done a very good job marketing ahead this year on the corn side. I think the biggest thing, when you look at the overall picture of the Corn Belt, I still think that there's a lot of grain that's going to be on the farm. Locally, guys have moved quite a bit, but I still say that they have been tight holders, and maybe not in Illinois and in Central Illinois where we're at, but if you look at the overall picture, I think that the stocks there, we've heard of renting storage space earlier this year before this big rise in the market. We've heard of renting new storage, but maybe not as many guys around here did that, but I think in the Corn Belt it's bigger than we normally accustomed to.
So not here in our part of the world, but the rest of the world may be holding on to a lot of corn. How about soybeans?
Soybeans, I would say that they're probably tighter holders, maybe so. than the corn locally because they haven't done a good job selling ahead when the market was higher in the spring. And then we saw lows down in the low $5 cashes prices here in August. And then obviously we've rallied since then into the middle of harvest as beans have followed corn. So they haven't done a very good job of beans. So I would say they're probably holding on to more beans, whether it's in the elevator, on storage, or on the farm. But still have a long way to go, I think. There, most guys are probably less than 50% sold on their bean crop this year.
And your bids, Brian?
We are 338 for cash corn this evening. January's 350. Fall 07, 339. Cash beans for now are 647. January 651, and fall of 07, 684.
Thanks much, Brian.
Thank you, Todd.
Brian Stark with the Andersons joining us here on the closing market report for a Monday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. We'll be back in just about 2 minutes.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Third-party gubernatorial candidate Rich Whitney said today the race is, quote, up for grabs, and it's possible he will upset Illinois Governor Rob Blagojevich and Republican challenger Judy Barr Topinka in tomorrow's election. The Carbondale lawyer says Ed Hallett will assist him in setting up a transition team if he wins. Hallett, who has run for office as both a Democrat and a Republican, is the son of former Secretary of State Michael Hallett. Indiana voters will decide tomorrow which party controls the Indiana House. They'll also choose the winners in three of the nation's most closely watched congressional battles. Election officials and political analysts expect those contests to contribute to a higher turnout than the last midterm election in 2002, when 38% of registered voters cast ballots in Indiana. About 30,000 people will staff Indiana's 5,500 precincts, with polls opening at 6 a.m. and closing at 6 p.m. local time. Also in Indiana, many voters will be required to show a state-issued photo ID for the first time as they vote. It's the first general election in which the 2005 state law is in effect. Indiana Democrats have challenged the law, but a federal court isn't expected to make a decision until after the election. Meanwhile, the Illinois State Board of Elections says early voting appears to have gained in popularity this election. Executive Director Dan White says he's received reports from Chicago-area polling places that the number of early voters might have doubled from the method's debut in the March primary. Investigators say a fire at a farm chemical warehouse near Piper City over the weekend was deliberately set. About 40 people living near the Heritage FS facility were evacuated when the arson fire began early Sunday morning, and three households are still being asked to stay away. Illinois EPA workers are investigating the extent of chemical spillage and the possible contamination of local wells. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
And I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture, coming to you today from the corner of Jackson and LaSalle Street in downtown Chicago, at the Chicago Board of Trade. Our thanks to the Board of Trade and to Craig Grabner and Maria Gemsky for setting up the program for today and for tomorrow. We appreciate all that they've done to help WIL Agriculture come to Chicago for this two-day run. Joining us now to take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather, another Chicagoan, and that'll be the folks from Chesapeake Energy right here in this fair city. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon there, Todd.
How are you, Mark?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm very well, Mark Russo, of course.
Hope you're enjoying Chicago.
Thank you very much. I'm having fun here so far.
Excellent.
Tell me about weather in the Midwest, please.
Yeah, well, as you can see today, it's a kind of cloudy day here with some scattered sprinkles and light rain showers, not only in Chicago, but across the northeastern portion of the Midwest. But it is a much milder pattern here compared to the past couple of weeks, which featured unseasonably cold pattern. But with this new kind of milder pattern, we think that that will continue at least for the next 10 days. So as a result, temperatures will be biased on the warm side. And along with that, we will be seeing some rain systems here coming through periodically, but in between these systems, which will move through about every 4 days or so, you'll have several days of dry conditions.
If we can switch the gears just a bit, usually we would talk about South America. I want to skip that just for today. If you have some information, there's been a lot of talk, chatter about China and the winter wheat areas there being awfully dry. Can you tell me more about that area of that nation?
Sure, Todd. Well, their primary winter wheat production zone runs from the Yellow River Valley in the central areas of China down through the Yangtze River Valley. Both of those areas account for the vast majority of winter wheat production. In the northern portion of that belt, namely in the Yellow River Valley acreage, that area has been exceptionally dry here over the past 4 to 5 weeks, with rainfall averaging less than 10% of normal across those areas, which over, you know, 4 or 5 week time frame is pretty significant. Now, some of that wheat is irrigated, but there is a percentage here that is not, and of that dry land acreage, this dryness is definitely impacting the crop here. That is delaying planting of the new crop, and but also the crop that was able to be seeded back in September or early October, that's having some trouble here germinating and becoming established in the proper fashion. So certainly there are some issues there in the winter wheat belt of China, and it seems like China and their winter wheat is yet another area having problems with wheat, which has been, you know, a problem here going all the way back to last year.
Mark, we appreciate you being with us today, and I'll try to get over to your offices in the next day and a half.
Great, Todd. Looking forward to it.
All right. Mark Russo with Chesapeake Energy out of Chicago, Illinois, joining us here on this special edition of the Closing Market Report, coming to you from the CBOT, the Chicago Board of Trade. You have a great afternoon. I'll talk to you from here again tomorrow. I'm Todd Gleason.